0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Well, Bill, I'm not hearing you, so I'll open the show for you. What the heck? It is Wednesday, December 14th, 2016. Welcome to Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you once again by ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Jim Chesko. You can call me Chet. And Bill Furman and I will be with you tonight, and we have a couple of very special guests along the way. So, Bill, are you there? The Birds played better Sunday against the Redskins. Carson Wentz played well, but the Eagles lost again and came out of the game kind of like a MASH unit. Not hearing you, Bill. But anyway, yeah, that whole final drive, boy, I had this fear with the third or fourth string right tackle, Matt Tobin, in there, that something bad was going to happen. And, boy, did an ugly finish and a lot of injuries to deal with now. On tonight's show, the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, going to be very football-heavy with our first of two guests. We'll be talking college football, the Big Ten champion Penn State Nittany Lions, Temple's coaching change, the whole Final Four selection process. Oh, boy, we're going to cover it all. We have with us former Penn State tackle, the goon Keith Conlon. Then we're going to follow that up with Fred and Butter's picks, followed by our sit-down with Coach Dick Vermeil. So it should be an interesting show. We'll try to squeeze in a little bit of Flyers and 76ers talk as well. Bill, can you hear us? Not you. We cannot hear you. All right. Well, we're going to give away our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question tonight also at about 7:24, giving away the signed 8x10 photo of Eagles Hall of Famer Maxi Bond to the first person that calls and correctly answers our trivia question. The ShopForKisses.org phone line to answer that trivia question is 929-477-2855. Again, 929-477-2855. With that, we welcome our first guest to the show, Keith Conlon. Keith, how you doing, man? Can you hear us okay? How you doing,
Keith? Can you hear me now? I'm doing good,
now,
man.
We got
how
it.
You guys doing?
Doing great. Yeah. This is Chet, and I'm a Penn State alum just like you. Before we get to the controversy about the Nittany Lions being left out of the playoff, what did you think of the 11-2 season that ended with a Big Ten championship?
It was unbelievable. I don't think anybody in outside of the football facility had any inclination that this was going to happen up here the way they played, and especially in late September, early October. I know nobody thought that Penn State had a shot to do what they did. So, kudos to coach, kudos to the staff, kudos to the players, everybody involved made a lot of things happen, and guys played tough, and you know they never quit in any game in the whole season.
And James Franklin, a lot of people wanted him fired when they were 2-2 back in late September, and now he's a finalist for Coach of the Year. What a turnaround by Coach Franklin, huh?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. You know, hard work pays off. There's no doubt about it. His kids trusted him. He trusted his kids. You know, I believe that, you know, Coach did a great job of, you know, putting Coach Joe Moorhead in charge of the offense and then Brett Pryor in charge of the defense and let them do their thing. And he played the head coach role perfectly, made a lot of great decisions. And as I said, he trusted his kids. I know Coach Linegrover on the offensive line had a hell of a season. You know, he was working with a MASH unit at times, and he made it happen every week.
I'm hearing some noise on the line, so I'm guessing we have Bill Furman. Bill, how you doing, man?
I am doing good. Trying to pull a rabbit out of the hat down here. Standing outside of a restaurant on International Drive in Orlando, but we're doing what we got to do.
Say hi to Keith, will you?
Hey, Keith, how are you, my man? Hey, I wanted to
What's
ask
up?
You, I caught a little bit there. I missed your very beginning, but I wanted to ask you, disappointment in Happy Valley over going to the Rose Bowl and not going to the Final Four, or looking at it as what a fantastic year, and we're happy to get what we got.
I like to call it a first world problem. I mean, if going to the Rose Bowl is a letdown, that's a first world problem. I don't think there's anybody, or there are people that are upset up here, but I mean, I think people have to put it in perspective. And we had two losses. Ohio State had one loss. Washington had one loss. Clemson had one loss. I mean, that's the way I looked at it. Maybe I'm, I should be slated towards Penn State, but I'm really not. I mean, they did what they had to do. Penn State did what they had to do, and we had one loss more than them. And I'm okay with how the playoff came out. I'd like to be in the Final Four. I like what's going to happen, and I believe it's going to happen again, is that, my team got screwed in the 94 season. That created the BCS, or the Bowl Alliance, or whatever crap that was. So I think that what happened this year with Penn State being left out, Oklahoma being left out, Michigan being left out, some pretty good teams right there, USC, that I think that it's going to be going to 8 sooner than later. And, again, Penn State falls prey to that, but, hey, whatever, man. If it gets to 8, it's better.
Hey, Keith, you mentioned 1994. How much do you wish there was a playoff system in place back in 94?
All the time. We're the most recognizable number 2 ranked team in the history of college football. So,
who would have believed that the Goon would have been the most rational person in Happy Valley? Because it really surprised me with that opinion. Because for one, I think Ohio State got a free pass into the playoff and having a bye, while everybody else had to play their way, basically play their way out if they lost, except for Alabama. Ohio State gets a free pass, and that really bothers me. And I think the system's broken and blown up.
Yeah, it'll happen, in my opinion. I think that's gonna be the way it's gonna go.
You think 8 teams is ideal? An 8-team playoff? What do you think? 8 teams,
nope.
Bill or Keith?
Yeah, I'm back here. What's going on? Sorry.
Yeah, do you think 8 teams is the way we should go in terms of a playoff?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. You guys clicked out there. 8 teams for sure. I mean, I think that's the way. I mean, anything more than that is a little excessive. You can get to 10 and maybe go, 10 to 12 and give some buys out and this and that, whatever, how the numbers work out that way. But I don't know. I mean, I think 8 would be the right thing to go. And that's the 5 conference title winners and then 3 at large. I mean, that brings in the Western Michigans of the world, the Boise States of the world, who, deserve it every once in a while, one of those teams. And, didn't have it for Western Michigan this year, but they got the playing in the Cotton Bowl against Wisconsin, which I'm sure we're going to get into here real soon. But, I believe it's going to be 8 for sure.
Hey, Keith, you are good friends along the way with Matt Rhule, and the Temple coach got a great opportunity to go to Baylor. I'm sure it's a great financial opportunity as well. Your thoughts on Coach Rhule and the job he's done with the Temple Owls? You being a Philly guy, I know you keep track of that.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I talked about it every once in a while. I mean, he was a couple years younger than me, but we were on the same team. I followed his career pretty close. He had some guys on his staff that I had grown up with, so we were intermingled a little bit there. But I think the ultimate compliment I can give to Matt Rhule is that when they upset Penn State 2 years ago down in Philadelphia, I mean, I noticed something that day, and that was that he out-Penn-stated Penn State. He won with a great defense, solid special teams, and an offense that didn't turn the ball over. It wasn't going to light the world on fire, but played ball control and stuff like that. So I watched how he coached in that game, and I was like, it was so similar to the way Joe would have coached a game, and I was very impressed by that. And then, going back-to-back 10-win seasons with the possibility of the 11th win this season is just unbelievable for him. And it's a great opportunity for him and Baylor, and with the new guy Collins coming in, I'd like to see if he can continue what Matt started.
Hey, what do you know about Jeff Collins? He's a Georgia native. He is the Florida defensive coordinator, now Temple head coach. Do you know anything beyond that about Jeff Collins?
I know that he and Matt had coached together a couple different places, and they're very good friends, and they have very similar styles in coaching. So that's why I'm interested to see what kind of transformation he makes as he follow the path down to what Matt was doing, or is he going to try and do something else? I mean, my opinion is I believe he's going to try and continue what Matt was doing down there.
Hey, Keith, you I find it interesting this year that, or well, over the last handful of years, and everybody wanted to talk SEC, they were the power conference and all this stuff. And this year that flipped over, and now the Big Ten is the power conference. What do you see the difference there, other than, you know, we've added a Jim Harbaugh that has made Michigan, you know, back relevant again, but in turn, Nebraska is down some and all that. What makes the Big Ten the number one conference now?
Well, you'll see it. I mean, in my opinion, it's the fresh coaches coming in within the last 5 years into the Big Ten. You know, the SEC will have a lot of upheaval this year and bringing guys in at LSU and other schools in South Carolina and Florida having new guys and, you know, rejuvenates the program, gets the recruiting going. And, you know, you can't deny what Franklin's done at Penn State, Meyer's done it at Ohio State, Harbaugh's doing at Michigan, Chris up at Wisconsin. You know, these guys are getting the job done recruiting because, you know, they were new and fresh on the scene because Penn State, I mean, the Big Ten was down for a few years there, so a couple guys lost their jobs.
Hey, Goon, January 2nd, the Rose Bowl, two of the hottest teams in the country, number 9 USC, number 5 Penn State. What do you expect in that game on January 2nd?
I can't wait. I mean, they're calling it the third highest rated, you know, that people are looking forward to game. And it's great because I think they're two hot teams coming in there. I hope we can maintain and not lose a little bit of luster after a lot of come from behind wins late in the season. I hope that we can go out there and, you know, it's going to be a tough place to play. We played them in what, 09 out there, and, you know, and it's a home game for them, but, you know, we travel really well. So I think our guys are going to be ready to go. Our coaches will be ready to go. It's a huge game for the program and a huge game for the Big Ten. So we're going to see. I mean, I love the matchup. I really, really do. It's going to be a great game. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Hey, Keith, speaking of the rankings in USC, and I'll ask you this. Do you feel like, as they're trying to at least tell us they do it, is the total body of work? And do you think that a 3-loss USC team who was really hot here at the end really deserves to be ranked so high with 3 losses? Is it really the body of work, or like it used to be where you lose late and you're out? Which do you like better?
You know what? I think that they were schizophrenic in how they picked their teams. I mean, some weeks they were saying that. Some weeks were conference champions who they played out of conference games. It never really – there's not a real I don't know if they're real consistent in what they do and how they choose every week and what teams are their top teams and who's going where. And I would like that to change. But, you know, I think that 8 teams would change that. But until we get there, I guess we got to go with what we got, and that is, you know, what are the 12 people sitting in a room deciding who is this and who is that. But if they had some more – I'm trying to think of the word. I mean, if they had just more consistency in their weekly thing and how they pick their teams, I'd like that a little bit better.
Yeah, it sounds like they don't really have guidelines to go by either.
No, they don't.
All right, Keith, football playoffs. Number 1 Alabama against number 4 Washington, and then, of course, number 2 Clemson taking on number 3 Ohio State. Everybody likes Bama, of course, to win that first playoff game. How about Clemson and Ohio State? How do they match up? Who wins?
Game scares me as a Big Ten guy because I think that Clemson can beat anybody in any time, but they could also go out there and lay an egg and not play well at all. You know, I think they played Clemson and Ohio State played a few years ago in an Orange Bowl, I believe. And, you know, I think that a lot of college teams struggle with you know, the dual-threat quarterbacks, and I think Watson is that. And, you know, Alabama will have problems with him. They have had problems with him. And Ohio State may have a problem with him. And I think Ohio State is really based too much on JT Barrett. But if their defense comes out and plays the way that they can play, I mean, they might win the whole thing again. So,
Could they beat Bama, do you think?
And if their defense is going to play the way they've been playing and has the ability to play, then yes, I believe that they could do that. I mean, you know, Meyer's no slouch as a coach, man. I mean, he gets it done out there, and it would be interesting to see. But again, they got to get through Clemson, and Clemson, you know, like I said, they struggle against a dual threat quarterback Ohio State does. So it would be interesting to see how that's going to go down. That's a huge, it's a great game right there. And the other one is Alabama Washington. I hope that Washington does not get Michigan State and just get whitewashed by 40 points, because that's no fun. You know, as a fan, that's horrible to watch. So I mean, I'm very interested to see how that game goes. The Washington, they can put a fight up against Alabama.
So who's your pick? Who wins it all?
Who wins it all? I just gave you about 9 different analogies right there, didn't I? 9 different things.
Yes, you did.
I'm gonna go out the line, and I'm gonna say Ohio State is gonna they're gonna do what they did a couple years ago and get hot at the right time, and
wow.
And then they're gonna take care of business. Hey, I'll step out a little bit.
Okay.
Hey, Keith.
From what
Philly
I understand,
guy,
go ahead.
No, it's Keith. I was gonna say, being a Philly guy, I know you were down at Monday Night Football a couple weeks ago. I was there, and we didn't get to get connected. But you watched the Eagles. What's your take on? You know, everybody here in town is wanting to, or not everybody, but wanting to fire already. But what's your take on how Doug Peterson's done and how Carson Wentz is developing?
It's scary because how well he started, and then. I mean, he had, 2 weeks of a training camp, maybe? No preseason games. It goes out and goes 3-0. And just how he has regressed, but it's not really him regressing. I think it's the NFL catching up. I mean, there's defensive coordinators in the league who eat rookie quarterbacks up. They eat them for a living. So I'm not worried about Wentz. I am worried about the offensive line. I think the Lane Johnson thing was a much larger thing than really guy people made it out to be. I mean, him being out for 10 games has absolutely murdered them. I mean, I think he should have taken them earlier in the year and got it over with. I know he was trying to appeal, but that really hurt them. But, I mean, as far as Peterson goes, the Cincinnati game really upset me because they didn't play for him. They quit on him. And I watched that this past weekend with the L.A. Rams going out to and Atlanta going out to L.A., and Atlanta just killed them. I mean, L.A. didn't want to be there. They weren't playing for Fisher. And, you know, I think that LA did the right thing in getting rid of him. But does Peterson deserve a second year? Yes. But do I think he may get fired? It's a real possibility.
Wow.
I'll be shocked if he gets fired. I think he does definitely get another year. But then, you know, next year we got to see some improvement all around.
Yeah, no doubt about that at all.
Hey, speaking of next year, from what I understand, Penn State has only, 4 or 5 seniors starting this year, so they got a lot of guys coming back next year. How good will the Nittany Lions be in 2017?
You know, I think the what I heard the other day was pretty cool, and that is anybody who touched the ball this year except for the center, anybody who caught the ball, ran the ball, threw the ball, are all returning. I mean, that's an offensive back right there, and they have a lot of depth at the offensive line, which they have not had, and they have a lot of youth at that offensive line. We got 3 freshman starters right there, and the way I always look at that is, you know, you get your booty beat a couple of years or for a year or so, and then it's time to start kicking some booty. So I'm interested to see how the offensive line does next year. But, I mean, the offense is going to be – I mean, they're losing nobody. I mean, that's the craziest part about it. So, and they're only going to get better in the offensive line. So I'm very, very much looking forward to it. And defensive line, I think we lose 2 guys on the defense. So, you know, it could be a repeat of next year. It's really scary to think about, but it could happen.
Hey, Keith, when you watch games, as a former offensive lineman yourself, do you pay extra attention to the O-line?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I watch it as an offensive lineman and as a coach. I'll watch the line play, and more so than watching the play actually develop. You know, when the ball gets released, I'll follow the ball, but I'll watch the offensive lineman up front. I mean, my wife will laugh. You know, I always sit there and I'll say hold or a chop or a – oh, there's something, there's a chop block or a hold. And she's like, how do you see that? I said, watch what I'm watching. So that's how I watched the game.
Hey, Keith, you're talking about that offense all returning. You and I talked about this a couple of years back, and you have a very strong opinion who the greatest offense in the history of college football is. Can this one match it? And by the way, you might want to mention who you think that is.
Well, I mean, we know who the greatest offense in the world in the history of college football is. You're talking to a member of it, you know, 94 offense. I mean, But, you know, there are very, very striking similarities to it. I mean, you got Mike Gesicki, who could play the tight end role very well. Quarterback's a little bit different with McSorley being a running guy, but Kerry was a stand-up pocket passer. But the biggest similarities are the wide receiver crew, and Saquon Barkley could be the Kejana Carter clone, in my opinion. They're both so powerfully built from, like, they're built like Earl Campbell with their leg strength, but they both have significant speed. So very similar traits. And as I said before, it really comes down to the offensive line. We'll see how they develop next year. And I mean, you know, they got to prove it. They got to do a lot of stuff to equal the 94 team, but I mean, they have the ability to do it.
I think I teed that one up for you, my friend.
Yes, you did.
Hey, Keith, before we let you go, you did make the upset pick of Ohio State to win the national championship, but I got to get your official pick on USC versus Penn State in the Rose Bowl.
Penn State by a late field goal.
Okay.
Then John Roberts is going to pay me on that one, baby.
John Roberts.
I hear you. I hear you. I bet he's listening. He's probably going to try to call and catch up with you.
Oh,
hey, Keith.
I know he's calling.
One last thing for you. What do you got going on in the Keith Conlon world these days? You busy?
Yeah, I'm up at State College. I do a couple different things. Working on doing some the Keystone Sports Network's a radio show based in Central Pennsylvania. Doing advertising on it, and I do a couple shows a week on it. So, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. Check it out. There's a bunch of podcasts on there. 3 days a week where we go about an hour show a piece, and a lot of good stuff on there, a lot of good recruiting stuff, a lot of good basketball, football, hockey, wrestling. So you're a Penn State fan, you listen to that.
Awesome.
All right, Keith. Well, hey, thanks for joining us, and let's do this again.
You got it, man. Let me know.
Okay.
Take care.
Sounds good. Okay.
Take care.
Go,
see you guys.
Go Lions.
Yes, sir.
All right, Chad. Hey, it's trivia time, and we are giving away this signed 8x10 photo of Eagles Hall of Famer Max Bond tonight. We've got to give this thing away. Courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, so the first person can call and correctly answer this trivia question. The shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. Chad, you saw the question. Is this a drop kick here?
Pretty easy. I would have been off just slightly with my guess, but, I mean, it's still pretty easy.
Oh, well, I thought it was an easy one. But since we're talking Penn State, we're talking Big Ten, here's your question. Since joining the Big Ten, how many conference championships have the Penn State Nittany Lions won? And that includes this year, okay? Since joining the Big Ten, how many conference championships have the Penn State Nittany Lions won? Okay, again, our number to call, 929-477-2855. Well, Chet, let's thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. It's Fresh Butter time with our special guest, Fred Hugo, joining us to provide a breakdown of this week's NFC East games. Fred, welcome back, and the Eagles let us down one more time, but I think there's a new leader in the clubhouse.
Oh, man, Fred and Butter slipping down. I fell to number two. I went on a big streak here. I went 0-3 last week. So, Bill, you are now in the lead with a 28-17-1 record. I'm sick of reading that tie, by the way. I'm now 26-19-1. And Chet, who's on a roll himself, has went above 500. Chet is now 23-22-1.
Hey,
look
a quick announcement,
Chet.
By the way, on a related note, the parade begins at noon tomorrow. That is the parade to celebrate me getting over the 500 mark finally.
Hey, Chet, I just keep looking up because Fred is falling fast. I don't want him to hurt you on the way down.
Yeah, he's getting closer to me now. I like it.
Yes, he is. Yes,
well,
he is.
I was getting so bored with winning that I had to create some drama for the listeners. So, I'll end on top, but I had to make it good, you know.
All right. So, hey, this week we have a lot of good games. Detroit at the Giants, Tampa Bay at Dallas, Carolina at Washington, and of course the Eagles are at the Ravens. Fred, take it away.
All right. First, we have the Detroit Lions coming to the Giants. Both teams are 9-4, believe it or not. That's really, you wouldn't have thought that in the beginning of the year. I believe the line opened 5.5, but now the Giants are 4-point favorites. Detroit has won 5 in a row, and the Giants with that big win on Sunday night. I don't know what caught me about that game is on top of winning, they really shut down Dallas's offense, but they beat Dallas and they've won 7 of their last 8. The Lions and the Giants both have terrible rushing offenses. The Lions are ranked 29th, Giants are 31st. And everything else about both these teams, statistically, they basically mimic each other. I think this will be like a defensive game, and to me the difference is star power. I think Eli, Odell, Cruz, and Shepard are greater than, I guess, an injured Stafford who was playing with the glove, and then Tate, Jones, and Bolden. I think the Giants will pull this one out 21-17.
You know what, Fred? The Giants came up big, in that low-scoring win over the Cowboys last Sunday night. But I'm smelling a little bit of a letdown here. I'm seeing Matt Stafford and the Lions pull off the upset at MetLife Stadium. I'm saying Lions 20-17.
Well, Fred, you're safe because you won't fall down that far. Because the Giants, for some unknown reason, are actually a good football team. And there's no reason for them to lose to the Detroit Lions at home. I'm going Giants.
Oh, man, I thought you were going to go the other way there. All right, the next game is Tampa at the Cowboys. The Buccaneers are 8-5. They've won 5 in a row, looking really good. Dallas obviously lost last week, but they're 11-2. They are favored. Well, it was 8.5. Now it's down to 7. And before I even get into it, I just want to say one thing. What's going on down there? All those fans are pulling for Romo. I thought it was just like a Twitter thing, and then it's a story on NFL.com, CBS.com. Jerry Jones didn't declare Dak the guy. I mean, they're crazy down there if they're going to start a quarterback controversy right now. That was unbelievable to read that this week. But They're not. I couldn't even believe it. But key matchups in this game is obviously Mike Evans is a star wide receiver against the 28th ranked Cowboy pass defense. I think he'll have a good day. The Cowboys run offense, we know how that goes. But the Cowboys run defense has slowly creeped up to number 2 overall, which I was surprised. And to me in this game, if you run the ball and stop the run, you're typically going to win. So I think the Cowboys will win this one. It'll be close throughout the game, but they'll pull away in the fourth quarter. Dallas 31, Buccaneers 21.
All right. The surging Bucks have played real well of late, as you said, Fred, 5 in a row. They're making a surprising playoff push, but I just don't see them winning down in Dallas. The Cowboys will rebound from that loss to the Giants. They knock off the Bucks 24-16. Again, Cowboys by 8.
Yeah, I'm going to go with exactly what you said, Chet. Tampa is playing good. Jameis Winston is playing real well, and he's got really good receivers. But I don't see them going down to Dallas, and I don't see Dallas losing 2 in a row. So I'm going to go Dallas. But I think it's going to be a little bit more low scoring, maybe 21-17 kind of game.
Okay. Now we got the Monday night game, the Carolina Panthers, who are 5-8. They just came off a win on the Chargers, are traveling to Washington, who is 7-5, struggled but beat the Eagles last week. They're 7-5. I said that, and that spread
7-5-1. Don't forget about that tie, Fred. 7-5-1.
The tie. Yeah, I forgot about the tie there. Yeah, that Bengals game. But anyway, so the spread's now 6. It was 4. The Redskins' pass offense against the Panthers' pass defense, which is pretty bad this year. They're young. It's going to be the main matchup. it's amazing where the Panthers were last year defensively and now where they are. I know injuries play contribute to that, but they're just it's crazy how far they've fallen off. A few years ago, the Panthers came into the link in a similar situation that they were out of it, and Mark Sanchez and the Eagles just blew them out of the stadium. I was at that game. It was pretty awesome. I think the same thing's going to happen here. There's no way that secondary can stop the receiving power and Kirk Cousins and the Redskins offense. I think the Redskins roll in this one 35-20.
Yeah, the Redskins right now are at the top of the pack of the non-playoff teams. They're number 7. Of course, you know, 6 teams make the playoffs. They are a half game back thanks to that tie earlier in the season. The Panthers, for whatever reason, are not the Panthers of a year ago. Yeah, injuries are part of it, sure. I see the Skins getting a much-needed win here. I'm going to say 30-16.
Well, I'm going to have to agree with you. You know, I've liked the Redskins for 2 years now. Carson, Jackson, Jordan, they've got weapons, and Cousins can throw the ball around, and even though they're still a little bit suspect on defense, they're scoring points. I'm going Redskins.
Now the
all right, one more.
The game of the week, I guess. Not anymore. Actually, we have a 0.002% chance of still making the playoffs. But the 5-8 Eagles, who have lost. You should have seen the scenario, too. It's crazy. But anyway, the 5-8 Eagles, they've lost 4 in a row. Travel to Baltimore, who is still in the race for the division. They lost last week. They're 7-6 and favored by 6 against the Eagles. I was impressed last week that the team came out and played for Peterson. I thought they gave a huge effort, and injuries really played a huge part in that line. It's just in shambles injury-wise, and it didn't have that much talent to begin with. The Ravens' offense isn't very good either. I just don't see how – I think the Ravens' offense or the Ravens' defense is going to dominate the Eagles' offensive line. I don't see how they can win this game. They're going to give effort just like they did last week, but I can't see them pulling it out. I think it'll be low scoring. We'll have a shot. I got Baltimore winning this 17-13.
Yeah, look, I would love to see the Eagles put a stop to that 4-game losing streak, but with that O-line still in disarray and all the other injuries, you know, they could have a 5th different guy playing right tackle in this game if Barber isn't ready to go. That's just nuts. I just don't see them winning this game no matter what happens. The Ravens are fighting for their playoff lives in the AFC. They're at home. They win this one. I'm giving them an extra touchdown from what Fred said. I have it 24-13 Ravens.
Well, and you know, it pains me every time I have to pick against the Eagles, but I have to pick against the Eagles this week. You know, I agree with what you said, and actually I said last week's show, I thought that the Eagles would man up and play hard, and they did. But now they're a mash unit, and they've lost some key guys, and they didn't have key guys to lose. They've lost backups. They got all kinds of problems here. I'm going to say Ravens. And the other thing I wanted to point out, if you look at PhillyPressBoxRadio.com today, I posted an article that talks about how they were mixing different players in and Barwin saw less snaps and some other younger guys are playing. So yeah, the experimentation is starting. I'm going Ravens 27, Eagles 17.
So it looks like we have all the exact same picks in the Ravens game, the Skins game, the Cowboys game. The only difference we have is that Lions-Giants game where I picked the Lions. You guys both went with the Giants.
Well,
so,
Fred,
so I can't gain any
ground this week. Look at it that way.
I can't gain any more ground. Real quick question for you guys. I don't know if you talked about this yet. If you're going to, then I'll just tell me later in the show. But what's your thoughts on Michael Floyd? You think the Eagles should take a flyer on him?
I would investigate it. I would wait till after the season, though. There's only 3 games left in this year. You hope that, you know, nobody claims him right away. This is not his first brush with the law. He had a drinking issue back in college and I think another time as well. So you got to make sure he's a character guy. That is still important, you know, to an extent. He has regressed a little bit as far as, you know, his numbers this year. So see what's going on with him personally and, you know, maybe. But I would certainly investigate it, but I wouldn't jump out and grab him right away.
Cool. Yeah, I would have to agree. You got to look at the baggage. I mean, we know that Jack can play, but what kind of baggage is there to cause him to be let go? And, is it baggage you can stand to have and bring in here for the end of the year when it really is meaningless at this point? So
yep.
I'm kind of with Chet. Let's take a look and see first.
Gotcha. Well, thanks, guys. I'll see you next week.
All right, Fred.
All right, Fred.
Great job, and you're always on top of things, my man.
Thanks. See you.
Take it easy.
All right. Hey, Chet, you had a chance to sit down with former Eagles coach and Super Bowl champion Coach Dick Vermeil this week. And, you know, Coach was supposed to join us live. He was kind enough to message you and say that he ran into a conflict but was certainly willing to sit with you. How was that?
Well, fantastic. And by the way, Coach Vermeil, who just turned 80 about 6 weeks ago, is still busy as heck and very tough to pin down. And we want to thank two of his former players and former guests of ours, Kevin Riley and Ken Dunnock, for putting in a good word for us. It definitely helped. And Coach and I had a real good talk about a wide array of subjects. So you ready to hear it?
Let's go. I haven't heard it either.
Very happy
so
to be joined on Philly Press Box Radio by legendary football coach Dick Vermeil. Coach, welcome.
Oh, nice to be with you, Chet.
Hey, Coach, my radio partner Bill and I have had six of your former players on our show, Bill Berge, Bill Bradley, Vince Papale, Dennis Franks, Kevin Riley, and then last month Ken Dunnock, and they've all been terrific. And I should add that Kevin brought us out to your annual golf tournament last June, and we had a blast meeting you and several of your ex-players, so thanks very much for that. What a great event that is.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you supporting it, and my players have really been really good about supporting it as well. I really appreciate it. We're going on our 25th anniversary right now. And, you know, a lot of volunteers, all led by Kevin Riley. He does 90% of the work. And we raised $190,000 net to distribute to the Boy Scout activities in Chester County. So we're proud of it.
In fact, to date, you've raised more than $5 million to support the Boy Scouts activities. So that's very impressive. And as you said, 25th annual event coming up next June. I guess it's June 20th. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Coach, it has been a rough couple of months for the Eagles. They've dropped 8 of their last 10 games. Is it just the lack of talent, injuries, growing pains for a rookie quarterback, or what's going on?
I think when you lose 8, like you just said, it's a combination of many things, not just any one thing. Don't think you can blame the quarterback. Yes, he is a rookie, but remember, he won the first 3 out. So, you know, he can play well. He played real well against the Redskins. The whole team played well enough to win. But unfortunately, A, they lose their long snapper. It cost them 3 points in field goals. They get a punt return callback for a hit in the back penalty. They dominated the game and lost, and they lost a couple others the same way. And if you coach long enough, those kind of things and activities and disappointments balance out. Some start coming your way. And hopefully before the season's over, 2 or 3 of these games will come their way. The breaks come to them rather than go to the opponent.
Hey, how big a factor was the 10-game suspension of right tackle Lane Johnson this season?
Well, it hurt. It hurt the continuity, and, I mean, it was glaring someday. They're playing their third right tackle. Nobody gets by doing that against a good pass rusher like they had in Kerrigan. You know, it's really tough. It was just so stupid for him to even think he needed some kind of enhancer of some kind that was supposedly legal. Well, why would a guy making the money he's making, being drafted like he was drafted, playing like he's playing, think he needs something else? My God, I mean, I think it's dumb.
I hear you. Hey, in 1976, you were in your first year as head coach of the Birds, and there weren't a lot of wins. You finished 4-10. Any similarities to your rookie season as coach to that of Doug Peterson now?
Well, you know, every season has a similarity. We lost a couple we could have won, but it's hard to play perfect. And when you're marginal at the skill positions that make the big plays, that make coaches look better than they really are, you can't make a mistake or two and still win. And that's the way we were at that time. My first year, we didn't have Wilbert Montgomery. We had Harold Carmichael and Charlie Smith, and they were both great players. Well, we didn't have the quarterback that we thought we had in Mark Barilla. It just didn't work within our scheme for him. And he went on to Tampa Bay, and we went out and got Jaworski. But it's just hard to get everyone to have a great game at the same time. And that's what you need when your team is marginal in those big play positions. And it's tough.
Hey, I remember Ray Dinger telling the story once that in your rookie season coaching the Eagles, some of the veterans didn't warm up to you right away. You would put up motivational quotes and whatever and trying to inspire the guys. And he said Bill Berge had a nickname for you behind your back. I guess that eventually did get back to you.
He still does.
Harry High School, right?
Yeah. But, you know, Bill came aboard, you know, and I can remember some of the incidents, the situations that helped him come along and continue to be the great player that he was when he came here and helped him join and become a leader. And like any leadership position, you have to earn the players and the people you're leading. You have to earn their trust. And sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it takes a while, especially if you're using a totally different approach.
As you said, Bill Berge did warm up to you before long, and today you guys are still great friends, he told me in September. And in fact, you remain tight with dozens of your old players, which says a lot about them and also about how they feel about you, does it not?
Oh, yeah. You know, that those guys, you know, I really cared about those guys, and they really cared about me. And, you know, when you go through what we went through for 7 years, 12 of those guys were with me all 7 years, you know. And when you go through that, you really, if you're the right kind of people, you really become close together. And obviously, you're talking about the Burgers and the Masters and the Bunnings mm-hmm. and all those kinds of people, Keith Krefley, and then comes Jaworski and those guys. They're the right kind of people. You know, they're definitely the right kind of people.
They sure are. Hey, Coach Vermeil, after you decided to retire in 1982, you had a very successful career as a college football analyst on TV. But I guess you started to get the itch to coach again in the mid-90s. And before going to the Rams, you nearly returned to the Eagles in 1995 after Rich Kotite was fired. How close did you come to returning to the Birds?
Very close. Very close. I screwed that up, really, myself. I think my own ego maybe and my own expectations, if I were going to go back, I had to be perfect. And I'd had opportunities to go back in very perfect situations. I'd been offered, I could write my own contract, those kind of things. And then I think I was a little too pushy in that situation with Jeffrey. He was a brand new owner and only been in there, you know, 1 year.
Yep.
And he was very sincere and we had some great talks. But I was a little bit afraid that having been out of it at that time 12 years, and going into an organization with the owner and people around them that had never been in it, I didn't think I could succeed. And then you know, my demands were too great. You know, I wanted total control because I felt that those people had no experience and I had some experience. And they were also consulting with other people, which is their right. But I didn't want to also be evaluated by the people he's consulting with. And it just didn't work. But really, when it all boils down, I screwed that up myself.
Huh. Well, of course, you ended up returning to the sidelines to coach the Rams in 1997, the St. Louis Rams. And the first 2 years were pretty unspectacular. But then in 1999, wow, what a turnaround. The unknown Kurt Warner takes over for the injured Trent Green in the preseason. You go 13-3 and win a Super Bowl. I have to ask you, how does it feel to win a Super Bowl?
Well, you know, having been there twice and lost one, I know it's a lot better feeling than losing one, but the longer you're away from it, the longer you're away from that experience, the more you appreciate also as much the game you lost, because it takes the same thing to get to a Super Bowl and lose as it does to get there and win. And unlike a baseball World Series or an NBA series for a championship, it's not the best of seven, it's the best of one. And sometimes on that given day, you're not the best and you lose and it's over. Where in the NBA or baseball, you go on and play game two or three, you know. In fact, my Eagles did more to earn the right to go to a Super Bowl and lose than my Rams did to go to the Super Bowl and win. But when we were in Philadelphia, you know, we didn't have a first, second, or third round pick for 3 years.
Right.
The first hype was my third year there. Third round, we drafted Reggie Wilkes, who became a good player for us. And if we had had those five other players, no one would have beaten us in the Super Bowl, and we might have been there in 79. But we didn't have them. But I'll tell you what those guys did to get there, the way they worked and the teamwork that, and the camaraderie and the loyalty and respect and love they gained for each other, put them in a Super Bowl. My Rams, I had first round pick. I had the very first pick in the draft. My first year there, got Orlando Pace. He's already in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, and I had total control of the personnel and the roster. And my staff worked real well together, and we were fortunate enough to go and win it.
And getting back to Kurt Warner, he and another guy you know pretty well, I would think, Brian Dawkins, are now 2017 Hall of Fame semifinalists. Two great guys, two great players. Do you think they get in next year?
I kind of doubt Brian Dawkins will on his first year, but I think Kurt being in the finals 3 years, and this is his third year in the finals, that I think he'll go in. I think it'll take a while for Brian to get in. He will go in, but I think it'll take some time.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people say, and you're probably right. Now, getting back to the current Eagles, since it is the holiday season, what would be on Doug Peterson's wish list in terms of what he'd like to have for 2017?
Well, I'd say probably number one, a home run hitter in the wide receiver position. number two maybe a corner, number three an offensive lineman. And they'll be able to fill one or two of those needs in free agency, I'm sure. And the other thing is, you know, just get their starting right tackle back and get another year or two out of Jason Peters at left tackle. And some of these guys that are having to play today because of injuries, they will be better players next year because of the experience they're getting this year. So I think they'll get better automatically, but they'll get better also because they'll be in a position to draft at least two or three real good players.
Well, I hope you're right. Hey, you're passionate not only about football, Coach, but also about wine. How did you get into the winery business with Vermeil Wines?
Well, you know, I was born and raised in Calistoga, the Napa Valley. I was born in my great-grandfather's home, Garibaldo Icari, my dad's Italian side of his family. He was in the Napa Valley in a little wine business called a wine merchant. He owned 48 acres of vineyard, and he was making his own wine. Prohibition came, and they poured all the wine in Napa River. But that was a part-time thing for him. He had a number of properties out there. His home, which I was born in, was his weekend summer home. And my dad took over the home and raised us there. And I used to help my grandfather, Vermeil, my dad's dad, make our family wines with Freddie Annie grapes, which we're still using to this day, which at 48 acres in the old days were part of my great-grandfather's. So I always had that interest, you know, and I always appreciated the family experience and the wine and the discussions, even when I didn't know anything about it. So I made up my mind one day, someday I'm going to make my own wine and put my great-grandfather and my dad's name on the label, Jean-Louis Vermeil. That's actually Vermeil. And I did that in 1998. With a friend. I had no money involved. We made 150 to 200 cases. The little winery that made them, On the Edge Winery, Paul Smith, made the wine, 150, 200 cases, and sold it as his wine. And for any bottle of wine that I wanted, I paid retail price for it. I was his best customer. And we did that all the way up until 2008. And some good friends of mine, New Jersey people, John Scarpa, Michael Aziz, came and said, hey, let's turn your hobby into a business. You've got all the connections and people out there to get it started. So we did. Now, we don't own the vineyard, but I was born into it, really. Mrs. Freddie Annie had it until she passed away at 94, 2 years ago. And she was my babysitter when I was born. You know, my great-grandfather, as I said, owned some of it years and years and years ago. And anyway, we had the mechanics in place, and we took off. Now we're making pretty close to 3,000 cases a year.
Wow. Yeah, sounds like it's going great. Hey, let's finish up, Coach, with a little Q&A segment that we call Fast Five. Five questions, five brief, easy answers. Sound good?
Good.
All right. Coach, other than the money that the league generates, what is the biggest difference between the NFL of 1976 and today's NFL?
The offensive schemes are multiple, five times much offensive in formation-wise, variations-wise, than in the old days. The old days, you were a coward if you didn't run the ball 40 times, you know, with two backs in the backfield and two wide receivers. Today, it's all wide open.
Yeah.
The no-huddle stuff. It's a faster-type game, which gives the defenses more problems. The other thing is different are the rules. There's more penalties to be called, therefore there are more penalties.
Oh, that's for sure.
More distractions. There's more advertisements. There's more distractions. But it's still a great football game and very entertaining.
Coach, I got to meet one of my favorite all-time players at your golf event last June, Harold Carmichael. How good was Harold in his prime?
Well, I'll tell you, he's a Hall of Fame player. If he were playing today, it would be obvious. His career average yards per catch was 15.9 yards. There's only three guys right now in the NFL playing this weekend that are averaging that per catch. So you can see his touchdown ratio, every seven catches he caught was a touchdown. Can imagine if we were throwing the ball 40 times rather than 25 or emphasizing him and taking advantage of the rules as they are today. My gosh.
Yep.
There would be no stopping Harold Carmichael.
Great
one. Player, one of the greatest, and a great person, one of the greatest.
All right. Hey, 5 years from now, will Carson Wentz be considered an elite quarterback?
I believe he will. I have no question about it. I have some concerns, areas he has to improve, but I think he has to improve his ability to accurately throw the ball deep downfield. And I think that can be improved on, but I think he has all the tools, and I think he's getting the good coaching.
And the final two. In the movie Invincible about our pal Vince Papale, how did Greg Kinnear do playing Dick Vermeil?
You know, I only saw the movie one time because I don't like to see myself or listen to myself or read stories about me. I just don't like it. Maybe that's my own sign of insecurity. But my son, who was on set, Rick Vermeil, our oldest son, was on set every day, and he said, Dad, he nailed you. When I watched the movie myself, it made me nervous.
I hear you.
It made me nervous. I think, and he really made an effort to do what he thought was right in depicting me.
All right. And finally, Coach, I sometimes eat buffalo wings and have a few beers while watching football. Is there a Vermeil wine that you could recommend to pair with wings?
Well, you know, I would say a Zinfandel. The Lavisi or Freddie Annie Zinfandel, we make about 150 cases of each. The Zin goes with that sharp sauce that's on them, the spices. Yeah. And we also have another bottle called Charbonneau, which we don't make much of, but it's a crispy, bright, upfront red wine that goes good with those kind of things. But for me, anything red would be good with it. Okay?
Perfect. Hey, what's the website for Vermeil Wines?
VermeilWines.com.
That's simple enough.
The great thing about today is early in the year, they made it legal to ship direct from California to Pennsylvania, ship wines direct, which we couldn't do that before. So we hope to expand our wine club here in Philadelphia Marketplace.
VermeilWines.com. Awesome. Coach Vermeil, this has been a real treat. Thanks very much for taking the time to visit Philly Press Box Radio.
Thank you, Jeff.
Wow. Chad, are you there?
I'm here.
I got to tell you.
You got me, Bill?
Yeah, I hear you. That might have been the best interview that we've done.
Dick was great. I'm amazed how sharp that guy is at 80 years old. I mean, he doesn't have to think about a response. Just comes right out. He's got it all right there. And, yeah, he was very forthcoming about the 95 candidacy for the Eagles job. And what he thought about Lane Johnson. How about that? Dumb, stupid.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know what? I have to tell you, I never knew that 1995 story.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was fairly close, but I didn't realize it was, you know, that close. And he admitted that it was just him being a little bit, too much of an egomaniac, I guess, wanting the total control and all that.
Yeah, no, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Great honesty on his part. Great questions by you. I hate that I missed it, but you did a great job as always.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Hey, while we have a second, where's our Penn State fans? We want to try to give this Maxi Bond autographed picture away. So the question again for the trivia prize, get in real quick. Since joining the Big Ten, how many conference championships have the Penn State Nittany Lions won? I'll give you a hint. The answer is somewhere between 2 and 6, okay? Since joining the Big Ten, how many conference championships have the Penn State Nittany Lions won? Our phone number is 929-477-2855.
All right. Hey, Chet, on our Philly Press Box Pick'em Pool this week, Kevin McClure was the winner. He won the tiebreaker over Jim Lehner and Billy Perman. But, Chet, I have to tell you, in the season standings to win the signed Eagles Reggie White mini helmet, it took a huge turn as Billy Perman, who happens to be my son, turned in a 5-game swing over Dave Capper and Gene McCann and Ed Chambers, actually. So Billy went from 3 down to 2 up. So he is now, as I said, 2-game lead after 14 weeks over Gene McCann and Ed Chambers. Dave Capper is 3 games back. Still 3 weeks to go. There are 7 players within 5 games. Time's running out, but anything can happen. As we saw, when you swing 5 games in a week, that's definitely going to blow up the standings.
Billy is Mr. Clutch, obviously.
Well, you got to do it again this week because there's just no room with just 2 games to go to have a bad week.
You got it.
All right. Hey, Chet, who do we have lined up for next week? Let's talk about that. We're going to have a tough act to follow having Nagoon and Coach Vermeil.
Yeah, we are. Now, I'm not going to give the drum roll tonight, Bill, because, to be honest, I'm not going to make the announcement just yet. If all goes well, though, we will have a pretty well-known former Eagle joining us on the show. He was supposed to get back to me today with the final confirmation, but it didn't happen. So just in case it blows up, I'm not going to say it yet, but we're going to hold off, and hopefully in the next couple of days we can announce who will be joining us next week.
Okay, and can you tell me, since I don't know the answer to this question, is it somebody we've had before?
No, it would be a newcomer to our show, a very popular former Eagle who had a lengthy career in the NFL. So let's hope it works out.
Okay, good deal. All right, hey, Chet, our new website, PhillyPressBoxRadio.com, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, it continues to grow. We're up almost to 9,100 visitors so far and still picking up steam. So, again, let's thank everyone. You people are amazing.
Yeah, and by the way, our regular visitors know that we put up some blog pieces on the website ourselves. I've wrote pieces in the last few days about the 1966-67 NBA champion 76ers, and then about point guard T.J. McConnell in the last few days. And I wanted to say thanks to everyone who has not only read those pieces, but also took the time to comment on the articles. We love getting your feedback, and you can comment on any of the pieces that we put up there. It's all there for you to check out at PhillyPressBoxRadio.com.
Yeah, and you know, Chet, we're not going to have time to do it tonight because I have our two guests, but I want to revisit next week if we have time. I want to talk about that reunion piece you wrote and the different things that happened with that 66 Sixers reunion and Hal Greer and all that. That was a cool event.
Oh, I love that team, man. I love that team, and I'm glad that so many of them were able to get together a week or so back.
Yep, we'll talk about that. We'll put that on our list to be sure we talk about next week before we run out of time. So, hey, let's get to our signing updates of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. Santa Claus is making his annual stop on Christmas Eve, which, by the way, Chet, in case you you got caught up in Miss Linda's birthday, don't forget Christmas is just 11 days away.
Oh, I know it. I know it. We're getting very close.
Yes, it is. Hey, Carl's has announced the first signing of 2017 with the Chief Flyers goalie Bobby Taylor will be coming to the store. Don't forget, you can get all your Christmas framing done at Carl's Cards as well. There is a deadline now for Christmas, and I believe it is this Friday is it. You got to get your stuff over there or you will not make Christmas. So they have framed up some great stuff. If you look on PhillyPressBoxRadio.com, click on the Carl's Cards and Collectibles banner at the top. You can go direct website for all the details. You can also see his Frame Them Up Friday stuff that he posts every Friday, which is some really cool memorabilia that different customers have brought in to get done. So stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. You can also contact Carl on Twitter at Carl's Cards. And Chet, I do not have a parting shot since I'm standing in the middle of the street, but I know you probably do.
Always, always. Yeah, Bill, with the Eagles season, a non-playoff campaign winding down, there will be a lot more focus in the weeks and months ahead on the Flyers and 76ers. We'll learn more about whether the Flyers, winners of nine straight games as we speak, can keep it going and whether they can be a legitimate playoff threat. It's fun watching Travis Konecny and Ivan Provorov continue to grow, and you got to love the way Steve Mason has looked in goal during the streak. I've been tough on Mason, but he's played well, certainly. For the Sixers, it's starting to get real. This evening, Jahlil Okafor and Joel Embiid were both in the starting lineup, and Nerlens Noel out this evening, should be back on Friday, so it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the Triple Towers. And then in just about a month, we could see Ben Simmons finally making his regular season pro debut. I, for one, can't wait to watch what happens with the Sixers and Flyers this winter and spring.
Me neither. I'm excited about it. I can't wait to see these three guys hit the court together. I think they can make something work if they want.
Go Sixers, go Flyers.
Yeah, that's right. Well, hey, Chet, we have reached the top of the hour, and let's thank our special guest, Coach Dick Vermeil, and the goon, Keith Conlon, Fred Hugo, Carl's Cards and Collectibles, for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesco, this is Bill Furman. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday, December the 21st. You can listen to our website, PhillyPressBoxRadio.com, our Facebook page, or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/PhillyPressBoxRadio. Excuse me, or on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.